Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. Excuse me. We are in the middle of covering the constitutional precedents that the federal government, the general government, has no authority to assume any new role, responsibility, or power. We just wrapped up with Madison vetoing the bonus bill. And so we're focused on one particular role, responsibility, and power, and that is the Department of Transportation. So here we are. We've already set up, or actually gone through, Madison, who has basically set up the complete argument that you cannot use the Commerce Clause, you cannot use the Necessary and Proper Clause, the Supremacy Clause, or the General Welfare and Defense Clause to assume any new role, responsibility, or power, regardless of how nice it is or how what a good idea this is for the federal government to do this. What we have to do is we have to amend the Constitution to delegate that authority, that role, responsibility, and power to the general government, because the Constitution is the property of the states. We have empowered the Supreme Court to ensure that we have some level of, let's just call it control, some level of control over those enumerated powers that give them jurisdiction so that the general government can speak up when all of a sudden there is some conflict between states. The whole point of the Commerce Clause, as I've said before, was for the general government to be able to be the mediator to ensure that one state isn't taking an advantage of another. So with that, one of the things that I wanted to share with you really quick is that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. I also want you to know that we really do appreciate, and as a matter of fact, you may want to let your friends know, you may want to let your like-minded compadres understand that the message of Republic Review is going to take a much broader and broader and broader perspective and a broader stance amongst what we will call the conservatives. We're working with organizations, and those organizations that we work with, we're telling you thumbs up, here is an organization that actually embraces a true solution. All of these other organizations, and when we get into the marketing, I'll talk about some things that have happened and so forth, but I want you to actually start challenging these other organizations. I want you to go out there and say, what fixes, what gets rid of all the unconstitutional government? What gets rid of all the unconstitutional spending? What restores all the powers back to the state and dismantles all of these laws and regulations that are all unconstitutional, that are constraining the states from being able to do everything it needs to do? What is that solution? Go to these conservative organizations and say, pray tell, what is your solution? And if they're not telling you Republic Review, they're telling you, oh, we're going to educate our way out of this, or we're going to have rallies, and we're going to do this, or, you know, we're going to vote for good guys that have nice kids and, you know, clean, you know, hygiene and, you know, drive nice cars, but not ritzy. Come on. That is the status quo. Even those who are claiming to support the Convention of States, when you challenge them in context to what does, you know, what is your plan to get rid of all the unconstitutional spending, all the unconstitutional offices, all the unconstitutional edicts and verdicts that have come from the Supreme Court? What are they? What is your plan to get rid of these things? If they tell you it's education, if they tell you, well, we got to start, you know, electing people, because I'll be honest with you, we got to get rid of the rhinos. We have to put in office people that are going to take a stand on the Constitution. If we're not doing that, then we're never going to win. But we also have to be very clear and succinct in the process of what needs to be done. And it's really sad that there are people that are just in love with creating organizations. They're in love with making their organization relevant, so forth and so on. That's one of the reasons why I went out of my way not to make Republic Review an organization. And if you really, if you understand Republic Review, it's actually something that is owned and should be owned and managed at the state legislator level. We have the republicreview.org domain. We don't have a website, but that's because when the states, when Wyoming or South Dakota, whatever state actually leads and actually starts standing and auditing and doing all of that stuff, they can do that at the state level, but there needs to be a shared domain, and Republic Review will be that shared domain. And so here we go. Are you ready? We're going to get into Madison's, his veto. We're going to read Madison's comments regarding the bill that Congress sent him to do the exact same thing they sent to Madison to create a Department of Transportation, to be able to permanently tax the states for doing road improvements and so forth. And again, as Madison said, you can't do this without an amendment. So if we, and I'm speculating, because we already know one president has actually said that. But if these other two presidents actually stand up and say the exact same thing I'm asserting that they're going to say, that means we have had three U.S. presidents from the framer era, except for Jackson. Jackson was not a framer. Jackson was a young pup when the Constitution was running. As a matter of fact, I think he was a newly elected congressman when Washington actually was retiring. And when Washington stepped into the halls of Congress, and I think this might have been in New York, this might have been the last session in New York, because I think the next session was somewhere else. Anyway, because I know Jefferson was living in the White House when he became president, and the transition of going to D.C. Was around this time frame. So anyway, I believe it was in New York. It may have been in Philadelphia, but regardless, when Washington stepped in, the entire audience stood up, and he walked through Congress, and everybody took off their hat except one person, Andrew Jackson. And so I just go, okay, so I'm sharing this with you so that you understand the arrogance of this man. Anyway, let's kind of dive into the veto of the Department of Transportation by James Monroe. Actually, I think there's one more thing I want to tell you. I want you to understand that we need to expand this listener audience. And so we just ask you to be one of our salespeople. We ask you to just basically go out and ask people to at least listen. Listen to this message. This is not entertainment. This is educational. This is This is empirical data being provided that provides an irrefutable argument that we must get the states to do everything within their power, not just to do it, but to force the federal government with the power that they possess into compliance. And then we're going to get into marketing once we get through Monroe and Jackson's. And I'm not going to read all of Jackson's because it would just take too much time and it's just blah. So we're going to just read excerpts of Andrew Jackson's veto. But this is Monroe. And so Monroe's, this is being done on May 4th, 1822. And Monroe basically starts off similar to Madison saying, having duly considered the bill entitled, quote, an act for the preservation and repair of the Cumberland Road, it is with deep regret approving as I do the policy that I am compelled to object to its passage and to return the bill to the House of Representatives in which it originated under a conviction that Congress do not possess the power under the Constitution to pass such a law. A power to, and so we're going to be going into a break in about a minute, but what we're going to do is we'll just move forward. A power to establish turnpikes with gates and tolls and to enforce the collection of tolls by penalties implies a power to adopt and execute a complete system of internal improvement. The Department of Transportation. See, I love Monroe because he's really speaking at the people level. Where Madison, wow, that was really hard to get your arms around. So I had to repeat it so many times. A right to impose duties to be paid by all persons passing a certain road and on horses and carriages, as is done by the bill, involves the right to take the land from the proprietor, the states, on evaluation and pass laws for the protection of the road from injuries, and if it exists as to one road, it exists to any other, and to as many roads as Congress may think proper to establish. Okay, so we're gonna stop right there, and when we come back, we will start right off with a right to legislate. So please stay tuned. These are probably the best words and profound words regarding the Department of Transportation and how they cannot just usurp these powers. We'll be right back. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
All right. So as I was saying while we were reading this, this is a lot easier to understand. It's not like he does not speak like Madison. Madison is, I don't know, he's probably the most brilliant president we've ever had. Anyway, moving on, he says, a right to legislate for one of these purposes is a right to legislate for the others. It is a complete right of jurisdiction and sovereignty for all the purposes of internal improvement. and not merely the right of applying money under the power vested in Congress to make appropriations, under which power, with the consent of the states through which this road passes, the work was originally commerced and has been so far executed. I am of the opinion that Congress do not possess this power, that the states individually cannot grant it, for although they may assent to the appropriation of money within their limits for such purposes, they can grant no power of jurisdiction or sovereignty by special compacts with the United States. This power can be granted only by an amendment to the Constitution. And so I don't know if you kind of understand what he just said, but you would think, okay, well, he's done. He actually nailed it right there. Well, no, he actually goes on. Because, again, this is a two-page reply. Jackson's is a pretty lengthy one, several pages. But anyway, moving on. If the power exists, it must be either because it has been specifically granted to the United States or that it is incidental to some power which has been specifically granted. Now, I'll use a good case. I think Thomas Woods used this in his book, Nullification, that clearly the federal government has, the general government has the role, responsibility, and power to manage immigration and to control the flow of people coming in and out of the United States. Therefore, if United States citizens want to leave and then come back, they can implement a system such as passports so that you can travel. And so they've actually worked with every other country in the world to create country passports to allow a person to leave their country and to visit other countries as long as they have those emissary roles or, because you just can't fly to North Korea and expect North Korea to let you in, right? You have to get permission with some countries because, we're considered a hostile country to North Korea or vice versa. They're considered hostile to us. Anyway, my point is that it is clearly something that is within the role, responsibility, and power of foreign affairs as well as immigration for the general government to create a system for passports for the travel of U.S. citizens. Nowhere, not even in the post roads, in understanding a post road is the road that connects the capital to the seat of government. Again, if you kind of look through every single state, you'll find that there is an interstate that connects that capital to the U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C. Some of the problems is that you'll actually, if you mark the route for the post road to be maintained and managed, you could easily come to the conclusion, okay, so it sure looks like, I-5 or I-15 and some of these other states, or I should say interstates that go throughout the United States, how are those truly connecting the capital? Because I-90 can connect, because I-90, it does connect to a small segment of I-5, but there's no need for I-5 to connect Canada to Mexico. And as a matter of fact, Sacramento has its own interstate. What is it, 80 or something like that, that actually shoots across and they start merging. They start coming together. And that was the whole point. The point was not to create this massive network of roads for commerce purposes. That onus and responsibility is really left to the states. Now, Madison was pretty clear in communicating during the Constitutional Convention and as well as, I should say, during the Federalist Papers and the ratification debates and those conventions, that the role of the federal government was external and outward facing. And if you understand the role of the states, it was supposed to be internal. Now, the overall general welfare and how states could flow and so forth, that really wasn't granted. Autonomy was maintained and actually sanctioned by the Constitution, that states were to be autonomous and to actually control their own destiny. So here's the thing. If you want to have a Department of Transportation and you read my book, I will tell you that the best mechanism is for the states to actually create their own domestic type of polities instead of using the federal government. Now they can actually charter the federal, not charter, but they can dictate to the federal government to collect taxes and to provide the money to maintain and manage, but then the states are actually in control and they don't create these boondoggles. Plus, more importantly, they don't allow the party system. It will be the state system, not the party system, that will be identifying how these roads would be constructed, how, you know, railroads, if they really want to do whatever they want to do. But it's left to the states instead of the federal government. We would have a much better system. And actually, this is where you'll actually start finding where states would actually learn to start working together, even though they're thriving in their autonomy. Anyway, moving on, he says this: if we examine the specific grants of power, we do not find it among them, nor is it incidental to any power which has been specifically granted. It has been contended that the power specifically granted, it is claimed only, it has never been contended that the power, so these people that have brought this forward and everybody that's been talking, you know, about creating a Department of Transportation, he says this, and it has never been contended that the power was specifically granted. But it is claimed only as being incidental to some or one or more of the powers which are specifically granted. The following are the powers from which it is said to be derived. Now, so he's actually throwing in this veto statement what Congress is giving, you know, him as how they're justifying the creation of the Department of Transportation. And he says, first, from the right to establish post offices and post roads. Second, from the right to declare war. Third, to regulate commerce. Fourth, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare. Fifth, from the power to make all laws necessary and proper for carrying into execution all the powers vested by the Constitution in the general government or by the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Sixth and lastly, from the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory and other property of the United States. Okay, so there's the six justifications and the powers that they're pointing to create this Department of Transportation. Monroe then goes on and says this: according to my judgment, it cannot be derived from either of these powers nor from all of them united, and in consequence, it does not exist. Do you get it? Having stated my objections to the bill, I should now cheerfully communicate at large the reasons on which they are founded, if I had time to reduce them to such a form as to include them in this paper. The advanced stage of the session renders that impossible. Having at the commencement of my service in this high trust considered it a duty to express the opinion that the United States does not possess the power in question, and to suggest for the consideration of Congress and the propriety of recommending to the states an amendment to the Constitution to vest the power in the United States. My attention has been often drawn to the subject, since in consequence whereof I have occasionally committed my sentiments to paper respecting it. the form which this exposition has assumed is not such as I should have given it, or forgive me, in not such as I should have given it had it been intended for Congress, nor is it concluded. Nevertheless, as it contains my views on this subject, being one which I deem very high of importance and which in many of the bearings has now become peculiarly urgent, I will communicate it to Congress if my power in the course of the day or certainly on Monday next. So in other words, he was basically saying that, hey, because we're about ready to let everybody go home for the summer, because if you understand, May, that's prepared. It's time to sow seeds. It's time to get out and get ready to make your money if you're a farmer and so forth. And so, and a lot of Americans at that point in time were still agrarian. The Industrial Revolution hadn't even occurred yet. So anyway, putting it in context, I think he hit the ball right out of the park. And we'll be right back with more after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so here clearly, Monroe just really focused. He pointed out how they were trying to justify this. He then pointed out that even connected all of these things as they fundamentally asserted that these were all implied within these six justifications that the Constitution allowed them to do this. Here, Monroe actually said no. And as a matter of fact, as a man that sat in the room with James Madison, Mason, Henry, and all of the others who ratified the Constitution, he understood that it is an enumerated constitution, that the general government cannot, they do not possess general powers to assume any role, responsibility, and power that they think is necessary, proper, or noble, or good. Clearly, he said that he too wanted to be able to sign this, but we've got to get this power delegated. Now, Andrew Jackson, like I said, is quite an arrogant man. But he, too, felt the same way. As a matter of fact, if you read his entire admonition or message back to Congress saying, you know, I'd love to do this. And he sought, you know, their to work with them in trying to get this done. They never got it done, folks. We've never gotten an amendment to create the Department of Transportation. It's just not there. And so what we've done and what I have done is I've actually highlighted just points and parts of this so that we can put this into a, you know, a good solid perspective for you. Then you can actually, you know, tell your friends, did you know that three presidents vetoed the concept of a Department of Transportation and said you had to amend the Constitution to have a Department of Transportation, that those powers implied or even directly enumerated do not exist? There is no connection in the enumerated powers within the Constitution to grant the general government the ability to operate, create and operate a Department of Transportation. Now, they do have the authority within the Constitution for a Coast Guard, but that should be under the Department of Defense as national security for external protection. So anyway, now we're talking May 27th, 1830. And clearly, this is another, what, 8 years. This is a little bit more. No, it's actually right around the same time because it was May when Monroe did it. So basically 8 years later, Congress not being happy and seeking to self-aggrandize their powers went to President Jackson, who seemed pretty willing to, you know, use government troughs and so forth. I mean, he was the first president to put the spoils program on steroids. And what I mean by the spoils program, using his ability to give all of those loyalists an opportunity to get a job within the federal government so that they could make some good money at the public expense. He basically replaced everybody and tried to create even new jobs within, you know, these executive departments and so forth. Anyway, this is how it starts off. To the House of Representatives, gentlemen, I have maturely considered the bill proposing to authorize, quote, a subscription of stock in the Maysville, Washington, Paris, and Lexington Turnpike Road Company, and now return the same bill to the House of Representatives in which it originated with my objections to its passage. So this is a little bit different now. There's actually a company out there that is, you know, working and has gotten kind of big. And they're, and apparently, I honestly think that there's some congressmen that are trying to help bolster up this company with federal dollars. Anyway, because that's, you know, everybody starts making the connection. Oh, well, we've got money now. We can actually start taking advantage of the public purse and pay those people who put us in office and so forth. I mean, Obama was huge on this. He was huge. Look at what he did with green energy and how much money he gave to his friends. Anyway, moving past this page, because that's just the very first paragraph. And let's see, second paragraph, third paragraph, fourth paragraph. And in the fourth paragraph, towards the end on the second page, he says this: every member of the Union in peace and war will be benefited by the improvement of inland navigation and the construction of highways in the several states. Let us then endeavor to attain this benefit in a mode which will be satisfactory to all. And then he goes on a little bit and talks about, you know, how to start doing this. And he says, to avoid these evils. So this is in two paragraphs later, starting off that paragraph. To avoid these evils, it appears to me that the most safe, just, and federal disposition which could be made of the surplus revenue would be its apportionment among the several states according to the ratio of representation And should this measure not be found warranted by the Constitution, that it would be expedient to propose to the states an amendment authorizing it. The constitutional power of the federal government to construct or promote works of internal improvement presents itself in two points. The first, as bearing upon the sovereignty of the states within whose limits their execution is contemplated. The second is asserting the simple right to appropriate money from the national treasury in aid of such works when undertaken by state authorities surrendering the claim of jurisdiction. So you got to understand, he just used a very powerful word or a little powerful clause there, that when the states allow it, they're surrendering jurisdiction. Now, I want you to understand something. Everybody understands that, you know, when you bring in money, the federal government creates strings attached to that money. Guess what? Show me in the Constitution where the federal government can create these grants for roads or this, you know, freebie of road improvements as long as you put in turnpikes or what have you. I'm here to tell you, my friends, that that power does not exist. It is not an enumerated power where the federal government can offer lucre to states as long as they support this agenda, these kinds of regulations, or do these types of things with that money. No, 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 no. Those that what they're doing with that money, first of all, is not an enumerated power, nor is there an enumerated power to allow the federal government to create those types of bondages, to create that type of oppression upon the states to say, you need the money, we're going to give you the money, but you got to do these other things if you take this money. That in itself is extortion. Just so you understand, that is not capital N, capital O, capital T. That is not in the Constitution. And every officer in the federal government, whether they're a bureaucrat or a public servant, they are violating the Constitution. So moving on, right, dot, 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 same paragraph. Although frequently and strenuously attempted, the power to this extent has never been exercised by the government in a single instance. It does not, in my opinion, possess it. And no bill, therefore, which admits it can receive my official sanction. Next paragraph. But in the other view of the power and the question is differently situated. The ground taken at an earlier period of government was, quote, and he basically, I don't know where he's quoting this, but he's quoting, that whenever money has been raised by the general government and is to be applied to a particular measure, a question arises whether the particular measure be within the enumerated authorities vested in Congress. If it be, the money requisite for it may be applied to it. If not, no such application can be made. So here you go, folks. I've told you before that the general government, when it assumes these roles and responsibilities and take unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers, and they take money from China and foreign nations, take on debt to spend in America on unconstitutional powers, this is full-fledged fraud. You got to understand, this is unconstitutional, and put it in very clean and concise context. Every single bit of federal debt that they have assumed over the years has not been constitutional. Every single piece of debt that we've been assuming is illegal fraud because they don't have the power to do these things within the Constitution. And this is exactly what he said. If it not, no such application can be made. Okay, so as you can tell with the introduction of an outgoing music, we are going into a break. So we've got one more segment. We should be able to wrap up what Jackson has said And so we'll be right back after this so we can wrap up these presidential vetoes. Thank you so much. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so anyway, let me find my space. Okay, so as we just left off, he basically said that even though Congress has the power to tax for them to function as a government, they do not have the power to spend money on things that are not enumerated. It is clearly enumerated that they can directly tax the states. But the spending of that money can only go, and the exercise of power can only go upon those enumerated powers. And that's why I reread this again. If it be money requisite for, it may be applied to it. If not, no such application can be made. He goes on and says this. And he actually talks about some really interesting things because he points out that Thomas Jefferson spent $15 million in buying the Louisiana Purchase. And there's been other money spent on roads and so forth to basically facilitate the utilization of that. Now, those were like one-time things that they, kind of stepped on the Constitution, but they didn't create a new role, responsibility, or power. And so, he goes on and says, independently of the sanction given to the appropriations for the Cumberland and other roads and objects under this power, the administration of Mr. Madison was characterized by an act which furnishes the strongest evidence of his opinion of its extent. Okay? So guess what? This is the exact same thing I had just read to you, and this is his review of this. A bill was passed through both houses of Congress and presented for his approval, quote, setting apart and pledging certain funds for construction of roads and canals and improving the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to internal commerce among the several states and to render more easy the less expensive the means and provisions for the common defense. Now, this Jackson goes on, close quote. So this is what Jackson says. Regarding the bill as asserting a power in the federal government to construct roads and canals within the limits of the states in which they may... In which they were made, he objected to its passage on the ground of its unconstitutionality, that the assent of the states respective in the mode provided by the bill could not confer the power in question. Now, even though the states would assent and the federal government could exercise this power, it would not be a formally assented power within the constraints of the Constitution. The only way the states can confer power to the general government for them to constitutionally perform an act is through an amendment. Okay? That the only cases in which the consent and concession of particular states can extend the power of Congress are those specified and provided for in the Constitution, and superadding to these avowals, his opinion is that, quote, a restriction of the power, close quote, to provide for the common defense and general welfare to cases which are provided for by the expenditure of money would still leave within the legislative power of Congress all the great and most important measures of government, money being the ordinary and necessary means of carrying them into execution, close quote. He keeps on quoting Madison here. So you can tell that at least he learned from the best. I have not been able to consider these declarations in any other point of view than as a concession that the right of appropriation is not limited by the power to carry into effect the measure for which the money is asked. As was formerly contended, the views of Mr. Monroe upon the subject were not left to inference. During his administration, a bill passed was through both houses of Congress conferring the jurisdiction and prescribing the mode by which the federal government should exercise it in the cases of the Cumberland Road. He returned it with objections to its passage. So here, Jackson just pointed to Madison, basically, you know, backhanding Congress, you know, slapping him in the face, saying, hey, you know, we can't just do this. You guys have to make an amendment to the Constitution and get the states to confer this power to us. Don't you understand our relationship? They're the superiors over all things not delegated. Do you understand, my friends? Everything that they are exercising that has not been delegated, they have no business doing. They have no business spending a penny on these things. And all the debt that they bring in to spend on things that they have no power to do, one, must be stopped. And two, the debt must be canceled because those folks, all of these folks, and as a matter of fact, I'm completely okay if China wants to take everybody that had voted for these bills on spending money unconstitutionally and all these things. That includes Rand Paul, Mike Lee. If they've signed and they voted for these bills, and they obviously not knowing, ignorance is no excuse. And so let these, if this is surely done by fraud, and if these countries who, whether they wanted to or not, they are, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, they're left in the cold. It doesn't matter. But if they want to claim that they're idiots like China, England, and the rest of these countries that have bought our debt on unconstitutional things, and they couldn't exert any time, legal time, to actually look and say, hey, you know what? This really is an enumerated constitution. This is not good debt to buy, because if the states wake up, we cannot collect this debt. Did you just hear what I said? Now you understand who the most dangerous person in the world is right now. And I don't want to be the only dangerous person in the world. I want you to understand these things. That's why we read these things for you. Don't take my word for it. Here are the words of Madison, Monroe, and Jackson. We are reading you the empirical data to create the framers' paradigm so that you understand just how beautiful this Constitution is and how it has... Only the Lord knew what we would need to protect us from these usurpations and this all corrupt, unconstitutional behavior that has been acted upon. All of these supposedly royal families, the Kennedys, you know, the Clintons, the Obamas, yes, the Kennedys, all of these royal families, the Roosevelts, any of these people, they're all culpable. They've all got blood on their hands. And we have all the power necessary to literally snap back this general government back into it. We put that genie just like that back into the bottle. I'm serious, folks. We have all the authority in the world to get this done. All of it. And we can actually do these things with Republic Review, as you know. Anyway, so getting on to with what Mr. Jackson has said. This brief reference to known facts will be sufficient to show the difficulty, if not impracticability, of bringing back the operations of the government to the construction of the Constitution set up in 1798, assuming that it is to be true reading in relation to the power under consideration. So he's even pointing to Jefferson and Madison, 1798, and saying, hey, you don't have the authority to do this, thus giving an admonitory proof of the force of implication and the necessity of guarding the Constitution with sleepless vigilance against the authority of precedents which have not the sanction of it most plainly defined powers. For although it is the duty of all to look at the sacred instrument instead of the statute book, to repudiate at all times encroachments upon its spirit, which are too apt to be affected by the conjuncture of peculiar and facilitated circumstances, it is not less true that the public good and the nature of our political institutions require that individual differences should yield to a well-settled acquiescence of the people and confederated authorities in particular constructions of the Constitution on doubtful points. Folks, you have to understand that we were protected big time. The final comments that I'm going to read is this. In the other view of the subject, and the only remaining one which is my intention to present at this time, is involved the expediency of embarking in a system of internal improvements without previous amendment of the Constitution, explaining and defining the precise powers of the federal government over it, assuming the right to appropriate money to aid in the construction of national works to be warranted by the contemporaneous and continued exposition of the Constitution, its insufficiency for the successful prosecution of them must be admitted by all candid minds. I'm telling you, folks, they have no authority to do this, and we've got three presidents of the framers' era who actually has told us so. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we will be getting into some marketing for you tomorrow.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic Review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.